All right, we are back after a wild week one in the NFL. Welcome back to the Catch the Blitz show. I'm Thomas Parkinick, joined by Christian Catanacci. Cat, the long anticipated week one. We waited months for this. How was it? How you doing, man?
Oh, it was horrible. I waited eight months for my team to season to be over. I waited 8 months for five of my six survivor entries to be done. But hey, at least I could enjoy some crazy games. I for one thought that was at least in recent memory one of the craziest week ones we've had. We have a lot to get over, and just like from upsets to injury for me, but like it felt like so much went on in like such a short period of time, which was like a complete shift because we went through months where it felt like nothing was going on. Obviously, it's the off season, first week one, everyone's hyped up, but I do really believe that it's not an overreaction to say that was probably one of the craziest week ones we've ever had.
It was crazy, and not just, you know, how some of the games went, but how, like, you know, how they ended.
Yes.
There were overtimes. There were almost two ties. There were missed field goals. Last night, Monday Night Football was crazy. At the same time, maybe it's just because I've come to expect this with the NFL, there weren't many games that were really like, oh, wow, that outcome really surprised me. Week one is a weird week. There's always these, these sort of crazy outcomes that happen. Like the Falcons nearly beating the Saints. Really didn't surprise me that much. I don't know if I'm in the minority there.
No.
Even last night, as crazy as it was, Seattle beating Russell Wilson, maybe it wasn't the craziest thing in the world.
No.
But that's why we love the NFL, and I guess maybe I've just come to expect the unexpected with the league. But, it was awesome. Football's finally back, and couldn't have really asked for a better way to kick things off.
Oh, yeah. I felt like something was going to be fishy when I saw, like, there's so many home underdogs.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And that's like a recipe sort of for some disaster. And we got exactly that. Like, when was the last time we had two games go that deep into overtime? We had one game go right to the end. And then we had one that obviously whatever, right?
Well, like, yeah, both games were the last kick of the game.
Exactly. We haven't seen sort of that grow right down to the wire, especially week one in a long, long time. And obviously one of them was the Steelers, and the Steelers were involved in a tie last year. So like, it's like always, I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. Cool to figure out, but I want to talk about that Monday night game yesterday. That was crazy. And I know you mentioned that you sort of could have seen it coming. I would put myself in the boat as well. But man, I was like, wow. And especially because of how, like, all the antics. Like, the Broncos were on the one-yard line twice. They fumbled twice. And then at the end of the game, you just paid your quarterback $50 million a year. And you take the ball out of his hands to attempt a 64-yard field goal, which NFL kickers of all time are 7 for 36 from beyond 60 yards.
And McManus has never hit a 60-plus yard. Yeah. I saw his numbers, his field goals for his career.
And McManus is a good kicker.
Yeah, he's a great kicker. And with Denver kickers, a lot of times people are like, oh, you know, he has that altitude.
Yeah.
But his numbers kicking are actually better on the road than they are at home. They said that on the broadcast last night. I'm not going to sit here and say coaching an NFL game is easy. You know, I could have done better. And like, who am I really to sit here and just tear into the decisions that Nathaniel Hackett made? And hey, it was his first game as an NFL coach. He's on the national stage, so many eyeballs watching him. And in the end, it just didn't go the way he wanted it to go. And I'm sure he's going to look back and reflect on what went wrong, how he can change things. He's got to improve with those spur of the moment decisions. It's hard. It's your first game in the NFL, and you're going up against Pete Carroll, who's probably a Hall of Fame coach, who's in his 70s and who's been there and done that before. And he knows Russell Wilson in and out.
Exactly.
It was strictly that Seattle clearly had this game circled on their calendar for a long time. The crowd was into it. They were letting Russ have it, which, by the way, I think is pretty ridiculous, but
oh yeah,
one day he'll get his flowers from the Seattle faithful, and I still do believe that. But man, Seattle was hyped to play this game. Gino had them rolling early. What a great story he was. And in the end, it wasn't just that last drive from Nathaniel Hackett that was just completely mismanaged. It was all game. They couldn't get the ball snapped on time. Seemed like forever. It was
two delay games in one drive.
It seemed like there was so much miscommunication at the line. Yeah. Russell Wilson just didn't seem fully comfortable in this Denver offense. And in the end, Nathaniel Hackett, the decision he was sort of forced to make, which he put himself in that position to begin with just such a disaster of a game. He clearly made the wrong one, which many people would agree with me on that one. And I think the nail in the coffin, or like it was just kicking Broncos fans while they're down, is the fact that he used the timeouts when the game was already over.
I didn't understand that. Did he think he had four timeouts?
I don't know. It's just like that's like it was almost something you'd see in a Madden game where the guy you're playing is just being annoying calling the timeouts, exactly. Thinks he still has a chance to win. In the NFL, every single time in that situation, players and coaches just run onto the field and shake hands. It's game over.
Yeah, and game's on. I didn't understand that either. I was so confused. I'm like, wait. I started thinking, I'm doing math in my head. I'm like, wait, are they going to get the ball back? And then I'm like, no, like what's going on here? It even confused me, and definitely didn't understand that. The one thing that stood out to me about Denver in general was, I feel like they used him quite a bit because he did end up having 11 catches, but I feel like I understand Melvin Gordon's a very effective running back, but I don't know. When I watch him, it feels like Javonte Williams is just the superior back. Yeah. I feel like if you featured your offense around him, like he's going to make plays. And I know he fumbled on the 1 yard line as well. Fumbles are going
to
happen.
To me, that was all pre-snap. They weren't ready.
Yes. And it was a great play. Al Woods made a fantastic play on the ball. Like a lot of running backs are going to fumble in that situation just given the circumstance, like you said, pre-snap, and then the play that the defensive lineman made. Look, just a matter of the circumstances there. But I was very impressed with what I saw from Javonte Williams, even though it felt like they split carries in terms of just running the football. I don't know. He just seems to always make plays, and I feel like it's in Denver's best interest going forward to sort of feature him a little more. I'm not saying completely get rid of Melvin Gordon, but maybe like a 70-30 80-20 split. I feel like if you run the ball a lot with Javonte Williams, and that's when Russ is good. Russ is very good off play action. And I thought Russ was pretty solid last night. He made a few plays where you're like, okay, that's old Russ. But then, you know what I mean? I felt like that this offense still needs a little bit more time to gel. That's why I'm not going to overreact too much about the first loss, because I do think it was more on the head coach than anything else. But I think we need to give credit to Seattle.
Oh yeah. What a story.
They were ready for that game. Yeah. Like I like how you mentioned before how they had that game circled. You could tell that they had that game circled. Like they could probably go 1-16, but they don't care. They won the Super Bowl right there. Right. And Geno Smith, incredible story. One of the best quotes you'll see all year after the game. Man, that was an exciting, exciting game. And I think for the NFL in general, that was the best outcome. I really do. I really, really do. I feel like just everything that goes into that game and the emotion that came with it, I feel like Seattle winning in front of their crowd, the booing aside, I don't agree with that. I think it's sort of ridiculous. But, I mean, that's just the emotions now. I guarantee you look back at it, everyone's going to sort of say, oh, what were we doing then? But look, the game was a game, and Seattle coming on top is very, very, very exciting for the league.
The booing, like the first thing I thought of when I heard the booing, I saw the video of him running out, and it was loud. And obviously,
you hear through the broadcast.
Yeah, like Seattle's notorious; they've always had that loud crowd, especially when they were in their Super Bowl era a couple of years back. But like the amount of stuff Russell Wilson is not just what he did on the football field, what he did for that Seattle community was kind of like okay, like I it was really to me it was unexpected, but. I guess it really is indicative of just how ugly things got between, you know, Russ, Pete Carroll, the Seahawks organization. This was a long time coming, but hey, Russ is 0-1 against his former team. Yeah. So if you're a Seahawks fan, like you got to be feeling on top right now. Like you said, especially you go into a season, it's low expectations.
Oh, yeah.
Right. All offseason, you're memed about your quarterback situation. Pete Carroll says you might have two QB1s, which is not something you want to hear. And obviously, it didn't really go over well in the NFL world. And Geno Smith comes out, and he just looked sensational. So efficient, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He played well. Seattle played well in general. And like I said, they had that game circled for probably all offseason, especially hearing all the stuff about Denver. Oh, Denver this, Denver that, Denver that. I'm sure... For Pete Carroll's ego, that was a big, big, big win. And you saw him on the sidelines. He was, when they were in the red zone, he was right in the five, like right there. And I don't see any, I've never seen coaches just go right to the 5 yard line like that. It was amazing. It was good to watch. I'm incredibly happy that, Seattle won for the city, for Geno Smith. Incredible story.
The 1-0 Seahawks sit atop the NFC West. Who would have ever thought at any point in the season that we would be sitting here?
The only team of the win.
The only team of the win. Yeah, they're 1-0. And they're riding high right now. So, you know, if the playoffs ended today, which they really don't, Seattle's in.
Seahawks country. Geno Smith. Let's ride.
Maybe Geno rides them to a surprise wild card spot. Who knows? Something we're going to monitor throughout the season. But sticking with, you know, all the week one talk, I think we have to acknowledge this is our second episode of this season. If you missed the first episode, go check it out because now is the time where we can sit back. Reflect
yes.
and absolutely clown ourselves because that episode has aged like spoiled milk. Our takes, both you and I had very emphatic opinions on two players in particular, and it couldn't have been more of a disaster in week one. Your Panthers and Baker Mayfield in his revenge game that just didn't go as planned. Not a bad effort in the end, but the beginning of it was a disaster. And I was... You know, puffing out my chest, talking about Trey Lance for hours a couple weeks ago. And he's 0-1, losing to the lowly Chicago Bears. What went wrong for us? Like, what a disaster.
Yeah, the first episode. I was so disappointed. And I was watching, I watched that game, like Pac said, for those that didn't watch the first episode, I suggest you go back and watch it. But I'll tell you right now, my team for this season was Cats Panthers, not the Pink Panthers of the VTFL. Cats Panthers.
You'd be better off with the VTFL team, to be honest.
And I am a big Baker Mayfield guy. I still am. Not straying from my opinion, but that was a very, very disappointing game. And I think I underestimated the fact that Carolina maybe has the worst coach in the NFL. They might have maybe the second worst. I'm going to put my man Mike McCarthy maybe down there. But it just felt like from a coaching standpoint, from a preparation standpoint, it's like how didn't you have your team ready for it? And I don't know. I felt Baker was ready for it. Maybe that's just because he was emotionally invested in this. He really, really wanted that win. And you saw that when he rushed that ball into the end zone. He gave it a little throw right against the back rafters there. I didn't think he played particularly poor. He had a few mistakes. But that's Baker. He's going to make those mistakes. He's sort of a gunslinging type quarterback. He's going to throw picks. He's going to throw touchdowns. But I felt like the team as a whole just was not prepared for this. And I felt like maybe they just overlooked the Browns because the whole Deshaun Watson stuff. Like, oh, Jacoby Brissett. We can beat Jacoby Brissett. McCaffrey didn't do much. But, I mean, if we're talking about my take, I stand in here and I said mortgage my parents' house. Thank God I didn't do that. Yeah, but yeah. I'd be homeless right now.
Yeah.
Right,
and I warned everyone not to listen to you. So I once again have to be the hero here. Like
so I thank God I'm not homeless, because that would be very bad right now. Maybe I think I slept outside the studio today.
Yeah,
you were about to. Right, maybe I have to bring my bed, put my bed back here after I keep hammering down on the Panthers.
Hammering them down on the Panthers. What a terrible idea that is. At least my Lions, you know, they covered the spread. So, 1-0 for my Lions, I guess. We're going to count that as wins for my Lions.
Yeah, it is. They cover the spread.
Cover the spread every week, and you'll be fine. Yeah, the Panthers game, like, obviously I was so invested in my Dolphins at 1 o'clock, but I was checking in on the Panthers just because, again, I sort of wanted to see them win. Jacoby Brissett was probably the epitome of a Jacoby Brissett stat line in what he did. Less than 200 yards. Just barely above 50% on the completion, one touchdown. But that Browns run game just reminded all of us that they're probably the best in the league.
Oh, yeah. Punch.
A healthy Nick Chubb and a healthy Kareem Hunt behind that O-line, you're going to win games, and you're going to be in games regardless if you have your starting quarterback or not. And they just gashed the Panthers all game long.
Yeah.
Nick Chubb had over 100 yards. Kareem Hunt got in the end zone twice. That's a textbook Cleveland Browns game. That's what you have to do for 11 weeks until your quarterback comes back. Stay, you know, hover. Try to hover at 500, and then you maybe have a chance for the playoffs. The Panthers on the other end. We talked so much last week about how wide open the wild card is. This is a game that you're going to look back on week 13, and if you're already, you know, two games behind, you're going to be kicking yourself that you lost that week one game because it was a winnable game. And the Browns were there for the taking without their quarterback. Baker was fired up, and they just couldn't get it done. It was too little, too late. Not enough McCaffrey for my liking.
You got to give your guys the ball, and I don't think they gave him
again. DJ Moore, like it was just not getting your best players involved. So a little disappointing from the Panthers for me, and very disappointing for you because you put your face behind this massive Baker Mayfield. We posted it at like 12 o'clock, an hour before the game starts. You talking about how Baker Mayfield's going to shock the world. Very quickly, were you getting ripped on?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I got that sent a couple times by some of my buddies and some of you. Instagram demons, you know who you are out there, but I mean, hey, look, I'm not succumbing to my Cats Panthers take. I'm still riding it out. Maybe week four that changes, but I need a team to cheer for now, right?
And it's true. Your Cowboys are pretty toast. I think we're gonna get to them a little later in the show. I guess we'll put me on blast for a little bit here. Talk about Trey Lance and the 49ers again. I was deep in the Dolphins game at that time. But obviously, a week ago, I praised him. It's no surprise that I got a ton of fantasy stock in Trey Lance. So I did want to watch that game as well. The weather played a big role. Not to be the excuse guy, but something does need to change there in San Fran because like you lost to the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Justin Fields was like 8 of 17 for 50 passing yards at one point, and the score was 10-0.
Yeah,
you got to win that game. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Blow that lead late against a young, inexperienced Bears team. You're not ready for the playoffs going forward.
Yeah. And look, that was my biggest concern with the 49ers going into the season. It wasn't that I don't think Trey Lance has the talent to sort of be a starting quarterback in this league. I think if he eventually will. You're going to have growing pains. That's why I felt like this season was going to be more about growing pains than anything else. Like, I felt like a lot of people were jumping the gun, like, oh, the 49ers. I saw so many comments that, and takes in general that people are like, oh, the 49ers are, how are the 49ers not going to be a 12-win team when they went to the Super Bowl in a game away from with Jimmy Garoppolo? I'm like, guys, Jimmy Garoppolo is an experienced veteran quarterback. Like, it's, you can't just expect a young kid to come in who's played like 400 snaps of professional football in his life. Including college, like, and that's college, not even pro football. It wasn't even D1, right? Like, you're asking a lot from one guy, and it's a heavy projection just to put it on that one guy right away. I do think he'll eventually, look, he's in a fantastic situation, right?
Yeah.
So it's only a matter of time until he's able to put everything together. I just don't know if that season, it's going to happen this season. And you saw it firsthand, week one.
Yeah.
Chicago Bears, I get it, the rain, it's pouring. The playing conditions were crazy, but like if a team was ready to go to the playoffs, they win that game, right? And I just don't know. Obviously, week 17 is a long ways away.
Like, good thing it's week one because maybe by week 17, week 18, they are ready to go to the playoffs and they've taken that step.
Exactly.
And to be fair, in my take, I did say maybe there are going to be some, you know, some growing pains. It's going to take some time for him to get to the level where I think he can be at.
Yeah.
So by no means am I selling my stock. We all know how long I like to hold on to my takes, and
he's got diamond hands.
I'll go down crashing and burning with them sometimes, and that's my own fault. But yeah, it was obviously a tough week one for him. And I mentioned that there were so many results where I honestly wasn't that surprised. Like I mentioned, the Falcons and the Saints. The Falcons almost winning did not surprise me at all. The Texans giving it to the Colts did not surprise me at all. This one surprised me. And I'm not saying I expected Trey Lance to Patrick Mahomes and throw 5 touchdowns, but I didn't expect them to lose the game. And they seemed to be in control till pretty much the very end. And
that's when they lost.
Bears just picked them apart.
Yeah.
So frustrating week one for a ton of teams. But like we say, good thing there are 18 weeks.
Frustrating for our credibility.
Frustrating for our credibility too, but hey, that's why we do the show. It's fun and we like to make fun of ourselves when things go south. But don't you worry. When we have good takes, we won't let people hear the end of it. It's part of the game. But I don't think there was a team that had a more frustrating week one than the Dallas Cowboys. And this is a team where it's like, yes, there are 17 weeks left, like I just said, but how good can you feel about those 17 weeks after what just happened? Because with Dak, they look like a disaster. Then Dak goes out, and now you know he's going to miss 8 weeks, and the season seems, what, over?
That haunts me right there, Pocket. It haunts me to say that the season was over. But it's so frustrating for me because it's like I go through a yearly cycle with this. And I think I speak for a lot of Cowboys fans. And I really do believe that the problem with the Cowboys is up in the office. And it's time for the Joneses to put their pride aside and look. You're not football guys, right? You played college football. You're one of the most successful business families in the history of sports. But hire a proper GM. Hire a proper head coach. None of this puppet gallery stuff anymore. The fans aren't going to take it anymore. Like, this is, as a whole, I've seen Cowboy fans very, very upset. And this year in general, or this time, I don't think I've seen a fan base as low as I've seen this Cowboys fan base. And it's frustrating because the fan base is so big and there's so much passion behind it. But just the product that they put on the field, it's disgusting because you lose your Amari Cooper, Lael Collins, Randy Gregory, and you replace him with nobody. And yet they stand there and they act like, oh, we paid this guy $40 million. He's got to elevate guys. Look, Dak wasn't good at all. He was very bad. But he's throwing a Dennis Houston. Who's Dennis Houston? You cut Amari Cooper for Dennis Houston? He's an undrafted free agent. I've never heard of Dennis Houston. Have you ever heard of Dennis Houston?
First time I'm hearing this.
He was genuinely the first time I've heard of Dennis Houston was in training camp. Yet, the one thing that really, really pisses me off is the fact that Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, they can just sit in front of a camera or do their radio show, whatever they do on Tuesday, and say the same old crap about, oh, we're trying to put the best product on the field. When they cut Amari Cooper, oh, this, that. Look, sure, if you want to make a move, you make a move. But if you're going to do nothing to back up the move that you've done and just say the same crap about how you're going to you're really trying to win games. It's obvious. The Cowboys I don't know if it's just the season, but it feels like it's been a while now. I don't really think the Joneses care about winning football games. I think they just care about the 25 million people that watch on Sunday Night Football, the brand in general making money. Sure. But if they really did, I don't know. I don't understand the thought process. Why not hire a GM who hires a head coach? Why not change the culture? They feel like the Raiders. Remember the Raiders when Al Davis just sort of used to run the show himself?
Yeah.
Right? I feel like that's what the Cowboys have become. And as an owner of a team, does it not make sense to let some football guys do it and reap the benefits? Like, would it not make... I feel like it just comes down to one thing about the Cowboys, and it's pride.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like, he's been the guy in charge for so long. He's been the guy that, you know, gets all the attention, and it's clearly, you know, he's also getting older.
Yeah.
He manages to draft some pretty good players. But
sure, but I
remember sitting here when we did those free agent live streams, and the whole NFL was making big moves. Like, the Raiders came up short last year in the playoffs. What did they do? They went out and they got Devontae Adams and Chandler Jones. Miami fell short of making the playoffs last year by one game. What did they do? They went out and they got Tyreek Hill and Teron Armstead. What did the Cowboys do? They fell short last year again of winning a playoff game. And Amari Cooper, say what you want. I get it. NFL rosters, it's all about value. If a guy's underperforming his contract, you're probably going to move him off. But like you said, they didn't replace him. And there was a clear drop-off in quality in that roster. And I sort of looked at it going into the going into the season and all offseason, like, hey, they got Dak Prescott. He's the best quarterback in that division. The gap was so big in the NFC East last year. Yeah, the Eagles, the Commanders, the Giants maybe got a little bit better, but did the gap really close all that much? I don't know. Maybe I was completely wrong with that. I was
wrong as well, to be honest. It's just like, I don't understand how, it's a perfect example. Even the Rams, the Super Bowl champion Rams, they went out and they went, got Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
Allen Robinson. They went out and made moves. And I feel like the Cowboys are so stuck with 20 decades ago. The thought process that they run their football team with is so, so outdated, right? It's like, oh, they care about cap space and saving money. The Cowboys have $36 million in unused money for the cap space. What are you doing with that money? Right? If you weren't going to use it, why'd you cut Amari Cooper? Amari Cooper is better than Dennis Houston, right? How do you expect? And then they go and they make a comment saying, oh, we're paying big money guys to make big plays and elevate guys around them. One of the best quarterbacks of all time, Aaron Rodgers, how did he look without Devontae Adams? And that's another poor take by me. I thought he was going to be more efficient. More efficient. He looked lost, right? Yeah. How do you expect a guy that's half the skill set in Dak, and I'm a big Dak guy, but look, Dak's no Aaron Rodgers, right? How do you expect Dak to go elevate guys, let alone if Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen, can't, right? And that's the thought process that goes with the Jones family. They genuinely think to themselves that they are putting a winning product on the field, and the fact of the matter is they're not. And now they have this excuse. Now they're going to go 0-8 and they're going to say, oh, their quarterback, my quarterback was hurt. Dak was hurt. Look, the Cowboys are going to be a bottom 10 team in the league. I'm telling you right now. I predicted this team to win 10 or 11 games with Dak. And that's just clinging up to the fact that Dak was going to carry them for 10 games. But they looked horrible. Their offensive line was horrible. Receivers horrible. Now they have this glaring excuse. Oh, we're going to have top 5 pick. But that's because our quarterback got hurt, not because we didn't do anything to make our team better. Right? And that's exactly that's the whole thought process. I just, it's so frustrating, and I know I'm not the only person that feels like this, but it's really, really, really annoying that we have to wait all year. And even last year, it was just all a tease at the end of the game. At the end of the day, we had everything go for us. We had all this stuff. We had a fantastic offense, but it's just the fact of the matter is this team won't do nothing until the Jerry Jones and his son and the family in general either, one, sell the team, what they're not going to do, so hire proper guys. Hire a general manager, sit back, reap the benefits of winning Super Bowls. It's a very simple prospect. We're not playing fantasy football here. Me and you can't go there. That's like me and you having a boatload of money and saying, you know what? I can do this myself. Jerry Jones got it. He's a fantastic businessman, football guy. Leave it to the pros, please. Hire a GM and let him run a football team properly, because clearly they think they're running either a team in the 90s, which Jimmy Johnson built. We won't even get into that. Jerry Jones fires him, wins the Super Bowl, thinks he can do it all himself. The Cowboys have been irrelevant for 30 years. The only thing that's saving them is their brand, and that's the only thing that the Joneses care about is that brand.
Yeah, I think you really said it all, and the big thing for me is like, Dak going out, is unfortunate as it is, it kind of almost like acts as this little excuse now.
It is.
But the fact is, it wasn't 27-24 for the Bucks or 27-24 for the Cowboys when he got injured. It was already a disaster, and the problems were already there. And now it's like they kind of have this easy out. And what do they do at the quarterback position now? Are they going to run Cooper Rush for the next, you know, 8-9 weeks? I read this morning that they could look into Jimmy Garoppolo. I know I said right away Jerry should pick up the phone. But again, like, it's going to take him a while to learn the system and everything. I don't know. I do think that if you ride with Cooper Rush, the division is fully out of reach by the time he comes back, 100%. Maybe if you find even Teddy Bridgewater, you can call Miami, and I'm sure they'll pick up the phone about Teddy Bridgewater. That could be an option, but at the same time, I don't know. This team without Dak, to me, is probably like the third best team in this division.
Third best team. I think without Dak, they're a bottom three team in the league. I wow. genuinely think that. I don't even think that bringing in anyone else is going to change anything. What's Jimmy Garoppolo? If we bring in Jimmy Garoppolo, what, am I going to watch my team suck with Jimmy Garoppolo for 8 weeks? Like, I'd rather just suck. I'd rather just suck with Cooper Rush. right? Maybe Jimmy Garoppolo squeaks out a win against the Commanders or something. Like, I'd rather just lose, right? I don't know. It's just ridiculous that people invest money into watching. It's time. Time is money, whatever way you want to put it. People invest their lives into watching this football team, yet the owners, the people that run it, they don't put a winning product on the field, and it's annoying. It's so, so annoying. And what makes it even crazier is that the Eagles, the Eagles is how you run an organization. They made the playoffs last year, and they're not content. They weren't saying, oh, we made the playoffs last year, we're just going to stick with our guys and our guys are going to get better. They know they had holes. What did they do? Traded for AJ Brown. Traded for Gardner Johnson. They were aggressive. That's what you got to do. Like, we had, mind you, we had Dak on a rookie contract for 4 years. We had him on a fourth round pick contract. What did we do? We did nothing. We surrounded him with Bryce Butler, Cole Beasley, Terrence Williams. Bryce Butler makes YouTube videos. He makes golf YouTube videos right now. That was our receiver one at one point. I swear to God, he was our receiver one at one point. And we're going to sit here and the Joneses are going to go, oh, we paid Dak $40 million to elevate guys. I get it. Look, Dak has to play better. But you guys up there, people that are running the show, those are the real people that has to do better. How do you expect a team to win? Look at everyone. Look at every single team. They're giving the blueprint. The Rams, we mentioned already. The Bucks, Julio Jones.
Yeah.
The Bucks didn't say, oh, we have enough weapons. The Bucks didn't go, oh, we have a wide receiver one. We don't need anyone else.
It does feel like every team was always looking to improve, except for the Cowboys.
Right? It's like they did it to us. And I guess people, maybe myself, I'm the only one. I don't know. I doubt it. But maybe I turned a blind eye to it, and I just figured that maybe Dak would just sort of get us out of this and we can take advantage of a poor division. But I really do think that was just wishful thinking, because this division, one, isn't as bad as I thought. Giants look good. Commanders look good. Eagles look very good. And look, let's face it. Dak is no Mahomes. Dak is no Allen. He's not going to go out there and he's not going to make plays with Dennis Houston as his wide receiver three. You got to get the guy some help. And I don't think it's fair to rely on a quarterback just that has, like, Tampa Bay showed the blueprint. Even if Dak didn't get hurt, you know how to beat the Cowboys. They blanketed CeeDee Lamb, blanketed Dalton Schultz. Where else are you going to go? Where else? Right? Dennis Houston's not going to be man-to-man coverage. Noah Brown, I love him. Fantastic fourth receiver, fifth receiver. But come on. What is he going to do? Yeah. He's going to do nothing, right? Adam, it's so, so frustrating that, like, I was so close to shutting off the TV, and it was week one. And then Dak got hurt. And that was the first thing. I wasn't even... That's how low the point has gotten as a Cowboy fan, that when Dak got hurt, my immediate reaction was, these Joneses now have an excuse for putting out a junior level football roster. Now they're just going to sit in there. Oh, the reason why we're 0-8 is because Dak got hurt in week one. No, it's not because Dak got hurt in week one. It's because you're putting out Dennis Houston. You cut Amari Cooper. Your Lael Collins replacement had three false start penalties. Three. Right? Tyron Smith, love him. Huge injury risk. Nothing there. You're lucky that you felt Tyler Smith, who actually played very good. Connor McGovern gets hurt. No depth behind him. It's just ridiculous. And the Cowboys will win some games. I guarantee you they will, because of the fact they have Micah Parsons. But it's a very low point for Cowboys fans. And I really do feel a lot of you out there. And it's super frustrating. I don't know if Pac probably thinks I'm a crazy guy, man, wild, but
oh yeah, definitely.
Nobody really knows how much it sucks to sort of do this every single year. But hey, we move on, I guess.
I do remind you, it is only week one, but you know, you're feeling. I understand. It's very, very frustrating. And out of all the things, week one, like, my biggest thing is everyone is so reactionary when it comes to the first week of the season. We're so excited to see our team. We have all these predictions in the preseason. We just expect every team that's good and every player that's good to perform well and to win. And that's never the case. That doesn't happen in any week of the NFL. So then for whatever reason, just because it's the first week, it's the only thing we've seen, we react and we come jump to these crazy conclusions that just aren't true. Happens every year, week one. My thing is you have to point out what's real and what's not real. The Cowboys, to me, I'm genuinely concerned about. I think what we saw week one could be something that repeats throughout the season. But other teams, not so much. I'm not fooled. So we're going to do two... we're going to talk about our overreactions, what we should be concerned about, which teams we should push the panic button already, which teams we shouldn't. We'll do two each. Do you want to start off?
Yeah, sure.
With your panic teams?
Panic teams, I actually have written here as what is an overreaction and what isn't an overreaction. Okay. But if you want to do that,
that? Whatever you have.
Okay, sure. I think, I'm going to push the panic, I'm going to push the button and say relax, is the Steelers making the playoffs. I saw a lot of people that were throwing that out there. I don't know if we watched a different game, but I'm pretty sure the Bengals turned the ball over five times. Yep. And
also missed a 29-yard field goal to win the game in overtime.
Yep. Right? And they also missed an extra point.
Yep.
So
like they needed all that. Five turnovers and the Bengals still had a chance in the end. Mitch Trubisky, not even 200 yards passing. Like,
I just don't know how people could watch the game and say like, "Oh, the Steelers are making the playoffs."
Like their defense is phenomenal.
Yeah, sure.
And the defense will play them in games, but how they won is just not sustainable at all. You're not going to get five turnovers every week.
No,
you're not.
No. So, and if they didn't, they probably lose that game by maybe two scores. Right.
I like that one. I actually had them as an honorable mention for a team that I would like quote unquote panic with, but it's hard to say that after a 1-0 win. Yeah, but yeah. I truly believe that they're non-sustainable. A team that I would say it's not an overreaction to, you know, like not push the panic button, but it's not an overreaction of what we saw in week one. That could be true. I have the Broncos and of course your Cowboys down. I'm not going to get into the Cowboys just because we spent a whole lot of time on them, but the Broncos, I was genuinely concerned about what I watched last night just because of how disorganized they were. And maybe that's something that can, you know, you hope that it gets better as the season goes on, but that's definitely something that will need to be touched up on. And if it's not, if that continues, that AFC West is not a forgiving division. They're already chasing. It's week one. They're already chasing that division. The Chiefs and the Chargers, 1-0, and the Broncos just lost probably one of their easiest games all season.
Yep.
So that's genuinely concerning to me.
I love how you use the disorganized term. Like, I literally had that in my brain. That was a perfect way to describe Denver last night. It was like... You couldn't have nailed that. That was a perfect way to describe Denver. And I would be pretty concerned too. Like you mentioned, you hit on everything you just said there. They got to play from behind now in the division. They got to catch Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, like legit might be maybe the second best quarterback in the league. That's why that's the biggest concern. You cannot let yourself fall too far back because you have to play catch up. It's the same problem with Denver that I have with the Raiders. But I think you nailed that. I agree. But I'm going to go into what isn't an overreaction as well. A team that I think is super, super legit. And I had a feeling they would be legit, but I had to see it first time. And that's the Minnesota Vikings. I really, really, really do believe that the Vikings are cooking something up there. Man, Kevin O'Connell. Look, everyone knew Jefferson was fantastic, but like he is next level, yeah. Right? Like he is unstoppable, right? And just this team in general, Dalvin Cook, a stud. Kirk Cousins is going to look like Matthew Stafford in this new system, right? Mm-hmm. He is. It's the fact. It's just the fact. He's going to have a fantastic season. The defense is good. They're so well coached. Look, I get it. Week one at home. It was already a poor matchup for Rodgers and the Packers. But that's going to be their division. That's going to be the division rival right there, right? Like, it's going to be them and the Packers. And the fact that they just made a statement like that and just beat the brakes off them. I was like, wow, this Vikings team is super, super, super legit. I would go as far as to say that they're sort of in my contending teams. And I really do think that they're one of the teams that I could genuinely see make it out of the NFC. Just because I still don't know how to read the conference. It still seems like a little, like, I don't want to say wide open because there's maybe five, six teams that could sort of get out of it, but I think the Vikings are one of those teams.
Especially with what we saw from the top team. I'm sort of piggybacking off of that one with my quote-unquote don't panic teams. And yeah, the Vikings looked amazing. But I'm gonna quote one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL when I say R-E-L-A-X. Relax. It's week one. We do not need to panic on Green Bay yet.
No.
We all remember what happened last year. Week one against the Saints was a disaster. Sure. And Aaron Rodgers went on to win his second straight MVP. He still has it. If Christian Watson catches a wide open 60-yard touchdown to start the game, maybe it's a different game.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's tough to play that sort of scenario game. But, hey, I don't think Aaron Rodgers is washed up yet. Obviously, last year and the year before that, he had Davante Adams. This is a new hurdle in his career. I think he'll get by. I don't think what we saw week one is going to happen every week. I'm sorry. This is not something I'm going to overreact on. And I think the Packers still have a shot at the playoffs. I think they still have a shot at the division.
Oh, you'd be dumb to count Aaron Rodgers out if that's the fact is, and it'll give him some time to get used to these younger receivers, right? And I mean, they're very well coached. They got a good run game. Their offensive line's very good. There's no Cowboys situation. I know I threw out the comparison before just how Aaron Rodgers looked lost with his receivers, but that's just fact. The fact of the matter is there's still more around Aaron Rodgers to succeed. They have a great O-line, great head coach. Defense is very good. And the receivers aren't even that poor, right? And when you're a guy like Aaron Rodgers, you can elevate guys like that. You can make it work just schematically. They got brains behind the operations there. But I don't know. I think it would be pretty dumb to say like, oh, that's... The Packers are done, right? Like I just mentioned, the Vikings and the Packers are going to be battling at this division. There's no doubt about it. But I think the Vikings deserve some respect and to be on that upper echelon of NFC teams. I really do think that they're one of those teams that are going to really burst out to the scene this year. I'm very, very high on the Vikings.
And last but not least, I'm going to say the 49ers aren't done yet. Trey Lance is not done yet. Don't write this kid off. I'm going to double down on my take. I still think he's going to have a great season, and I think we'll all laugh about this week one mud game sometime soon. I'll leave it at that.
I think that's a good take, right? He's got all the tools, and the team he's set up to succeed. Like, he's in a perfect situation, so it's only a matter of time.
The Elijah Mitchell news hurts them a little bit, and obviously not having George Kittle on Sunday.
My fantasy team, too.
But... hey, Jeff Wilson on the waiver wire this week. Everyone's going to be after him. So
put all my points on that guy.
Yeah. All right. Before we wrap up the show today, not to, again, overreact, but week one, we got to see all 32 play. Which team impressed you the most?
I'm going to go and say your Lions.
Wow.
I did not think the Lions were going to be... I thought they were still around 4 or 5 win team, but I don't know, man. They got some players cooking down there in most city over there. Dan Campbell and Jared Goff and DeAndre Swift. I don't know if this is a hot take, but he might be the best running back in the league. Well, from a skill set.
Yeah, I spoke to a friend of the show, Thomas Coburn. Resident Lions fan, Thomas Coburn. Just picking his brain about the game. You know, how would you guys... Because at one point, it looked like it was out of reach, and then they stormed back to only lose by 3 points. Very similar to what they did last year, week one, against the 49ers. So I asked him, you know, how'd you guys do it? How'd the game go? And he said that the Lions' offensive line is just unfair. And I believe him, because... how they built it, and you know, Penei Sewell, Frank Ragnow, Taylor Decker, like they have so many good players. And he said that O-line, like anyone could run behind it. And Swift is not just anyone. He's a machine and he has so much skill. Jamal Williams had a great
game. Jamal Williams,
the team is set up where Jared Goff really doesn't have to do all that much. And they have some good weapons as well. So I like the Lions this year, and I like how you picked my Lions as one of the most
16 touches.
Teams.
He averaged 9.6 yards a carry. Yeah,
he's a machine. Swift. And that's that O-line. They're moving bodies, and they played against a very, very good front four in Philadelphia, like Fletcher Cox, you know, Brandon Graham coming off the edge. So if I'm a Lions fan, I'm pleased. I'm pleased. I'm optimistic with how game 100%. One went, and you're looking forward to the rest of the season. I went in a totally different direction than you, and this is boring, but I watched Patrick Mahomes.
Oh,
in
the
4 o'clock spot. And obviously, like I said, I watched Miami in the 1 o'clock, and I thought Tua played a, you know, pretty decent game, made some good throws, made some bad throws, lot to improve on, lot to look forward to. And then I watched Patrick Mahomes, and I was just like, this guy is unbelievable. He's so talented.
Oh, yeah. And he's on his own tier.
He's heard the noise this year. And he's out on a mission to prove everyone that he's the guy. He's the best quarterback in the league. Because the narrative on Mahomes, yes, everyone still thinks he's great. But after his first season, it was like, this guy's going to wreck this league and no one is ever going to come remotely close to what he's capable of. And now a man by the name of Josh Allen has come in. There's a lot of hype. Everyone on this planet seems to think the Bills are going to walk away with the Super Bowl this year. I bet you Patrick Mahomes has something to say about that. And he was so impressive in week one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's just shaping up for a massive, massive year. Just the throws that he was making and I sat here and picked Patrick Mahomes to win the MVP, right? Because I've had a feeling. I'm like, look, people are Patrick Mahomes. Like, it's Patrick Mahomes, right? Got rid of Tyreek Hill. Why do you need to pay Tyreek Hill $45 million when you have Kelce, Mahomes, Andy Reid? That's all you need, right? You don't need another guy to pay $40 million. Just beef up the defense, beef up the offensive line, and reap the benefits. But I loved what I saw from the Chiefs. Loved, loved, loved. And I think those are two good teams. Look, they're on the complete opposite ends of the spectrum here. Yeah. We got one team that's Super Bowl contender and Pox Lions.
My Lions.
But
that's it.
Hey, I like those picks and they're justifiable in both ways. But man, that was a crazy week one. A crazy, crazy, crazy week one. And we obviously, if you've made it this far, we appreciate it. Like, subscribe, do all that fun stuff. Pushes these videos out there. We're really going to try and hype up some more YouTube stuff. I might go to Dallas with a sell the team shirt and film some people down there and maybe make a YouTube video out of that. But hey, if you want to see that, let me know. I'm more than happy to do it. Tickets are cheap. $34
really?
To go this week. Yeah, $34.
Wow. No one wants to watch Cooper Rush.
Jerry Jones, welcome to Irrelevancy, buddy.
I think you guys beat the Bengals this week. That's going to be my bold prediction.
Wow, okay, I'm not going to say that. But
it's the end of the episode. Not that many people are listening anyway, so I can say whatever I want right now.
We're going to put that on. We're going to put that on the billboard right now. Yeah. Cowboys lose 54-3.
All right, guys, thanks for tuning in, and a lot of fun today. Football's back, and we'll see you next week.
See you guys.